No, you'll have to.
Everybody, welcome to Doug's History Lesson here on the Everything Unscripted Podcast Network. I, of course, am your teacher for this lesson. I am Professor Doug Hummer. All right. And in the classroom today, I have my students. I have Eric.
What up?
All right. Clintus is here.
Hello.
All right. We have... back with us for the first time in a while, Kenny Lehman is here.
Hello, hello.
And we have first timer on the show. I don't know why the hell he's hanging out over at my mother's house. We have Sean here.
Hello.
All right. So real quick, listen to Boxman and Smart, the Dirt Sheet Dudes, every Wednesday, Friday night. Mixer.com/dirtsheetdudes. They can be found on all major podcast platforms. Use around 10:15, 10:20 Eastern time, right after wrestling's over on Wednesday and Friday. Listen to us, 6:30 p.m. Eastern time every Friday night. blogtalkradio.com/everythingunscripted. For the Unscripted Wrestling Podcast, next Friday night, May 21st, we're going to be doing Judgment Day 2000, the Rock Triple H Iron Man match. May 28th, we'll be back with another edition of Fantasy Warfare. Plus, we'll be doing AEW's Double or Nothing. Then on June 4th, we're going to be doing part two of the New Generation roster, the New Generation Era tier list. Also, listen to us. Saturday nights are, you know, we don't know usually what we're doing on Saturday. It's just whatever we come up with. I think next Saturday, Eric, I think we're doing another MMA thing or a UFC thing, right?
Yeah. TJ Dillashaw versus forgot now, but it's title fight next.
It's gonna be our UFC UFC show next Saturday night.
Yeah.
All right, and then
TJ Dillashaw versus Dominic Cruz.
All right, thank you. Right, and then tomorrow 3 p.m. Eastern time here on blogtalkradio.com/everythingunscripted will be the Scaredy podcast with Daniel and Mindy. They're gonna be doing My Bloody Valentine from 2009. All right. Basically, here's how this is going to work for anybody that's never joined us in the classroom before. The subject of tonight's history lesson is Hot Stuff Eddie Gilbert. And I'm basically going to go into his career and certain things about him. And basically, what you guys are doing as my students is that, like, you will start asking questions. And it could be questions about, like, you know, his career or, like, hypotheticals. It doesn't matter. If you have stuff to add, which I'm pretty sure Kenny will, then, you know, obviously you can go ahead and add it. I mean, wait for me to kind of call on you.
How are you going to call on us if we don't raise our hand?
Well, I am going to basically just wait for me to call your name, and then I will. Like, if you guys have questions or comments or whatever after I get done with each each statement. So basically, to start this off, the subject of our history lesson today is Eddie Gilbert, born on August 14th, 1961. Unfortunately, he passed away on February 18th, 1995, and Eddie Gilbert, basically, he's a second-generation star, the son of Tommy Gilbert. Of course, Eddie was born as Tommy Gilbert Jr. And he started, he was basically, he was born, or he started in Memphis, Tennessee. He was born in Lexington. But father was a mainstay in Memphis. So that's where he started in 1977. Now, a lot of people may not know this, but not only was he known for wrestling, but he was also known for his booking. He booked several different places. He booked in Memphis, or he had some ideas in Memphis, but he's mainly known for his booking in ECW.
ECW.
So, but when he started he started in the tennis in Memphis, Tennessee, in the Continental Wrestling Association as Tommy Gilbert Jr. And he was actually his father's tag team partner. Now, he did have a run in the WWF in 1982. He was actually Bob Backlund's protege. And when he was there, he unfortunately was involved in a serious car accident in 1983, which kind of, screwed him up, basically just about to the end of his life, because that's actually the injuries from that car accident, I guess, also kind of caught up to him when he passed away in 1995. So... but he was basically known, he was probably a better, in my opinion, he was probably a better heel than he was babyface, although he did work both. Eric, you and I have actually talked to several people that have actually worked, with Eddie when Eddie was a booker.
Okay.
All right.
He were on the show, right?
No, Eric, we called him up on the phone and talked to him. I mean, well, we did talk to him while they were on the phone. But, they were on the show. Barry Horowitz being one of them. And then when we had the guys on for the GWF, episode.
Okay.
So, and one of the things too is when they in 1989 when WCW, or back then it was the NWA still, but WCW, when they fired George Scott after the Clash of Champions debacle, which that whole thing was they didn't get ready for an April 89 Clash of Champions because George Scott didn't want to advertise it because he thought it was going to ruin the house show business, even though they were doing Flair versus Steamboat. But they didn't want to kill the house shows, even though they were owned by a TV company. They didn't want to kill the house shows. So they didn't get a lot of viewers for that clash. George Scott got fired. They started going to a committee setting, and Eddie Gilbert was one of the first people sat on that committee.
Nice.
And when Ric Flair took over, Ric Flair and Eddie Gilbert did not get along.
Oh, wow.
All right. And the reason, and it's been talked about before, like Jim Cornette talked about it, like Eddie Gilbert one time in Memphis, they were in Memphis and he was wrestling Ron Simmons and Rick was trying to get Ron Simmons over. But Eddie was like the senior member of the booking committee, like in charge that day because he was there. He may have been the only one there or whatever. And he changed the finish and he went over. Because it was Memphis. It was his hometown, so he felt like he should go over. Flair found out about it. Flair didn't like it. So then Flair called Jim Cornette and said, look, I got to get this fucker off the committee. You're going to take his spot. So, Sean, knock off the background noise, please. So then Eddie Gilbert was then replaced off, or was then replaced on the WCW booking committee by Jim Cornette. And basically that was kind of not necessarily the end of Eddie Gilbert in WCW, because he was still there for another year. But once, like, you kind of you lose, like, your booking power, you really don't want to stay on as a talent. I mean, it's happened many days. Like, it happened with Dusty, like, the year prior. He was head booker in Crockett and in WCW. He got fired. He tried to stay on, but then he realized that if he wasn't in charge, he didn't want to be there. So, all right, Eric, or questions or comments?
Who was his biggest feud with? Was it with Flair?
Not really with Flair. I mean, his biggest feud was probably in Memphis. I mean, so many big feuds, but like the one when he was in Mid-South or the Universal Wrestling Federation, and he led a stable of wrestlers, and he led Hot Stuff International. And, like, he kind of got into he was in a feud with John Tatum. And
okay. It,
mainly because he stole Missy Hyatt from John Tatum. Like, Missy Hyatt and John Tatum were actually dating. Well, then Eddie started, porking Missy Hyatt behind the scenes. That led to a feud between the two. And that became a big feud. But he also worked Hot Stuff International. You know, he managed Rick Steiner and Sting and the Warrior. But there was a feud. It was Chris Adams and Sting versus Terry Taylor and Eddie. And they had, like, this big concession stand brawl where they were basically throwing everything at each other. But then there was another rivalry in 1990. It was in the USWA, and Eddie had been, quote-unquote, fired from the company. So as revenge, him and his brother Doug ran over Jerry Lawler with their car and fled the scene.
Wow.
And
what were you saying, Sean?
I never heard that story, and it's just that's insane to hear.
Well, I mean, it wasn't like it was a storyline.
Okay. I thought like it was like an actual thing.
No, it was a storyline, right? And it was a storyline. Lawler was booking. And it was it was a quote unquote retaliation for Eddie and Joe getting fired. But so they hit Jerry Lawler with their car, but there were people watching at home.
Eddie and who? Wait, whoa, who?
Eddie and Doug.
You said Joe.
Oh, did I?
Yeah.
All right. Well, no, Eddie and Doug Gilbert.
I just wanted to make sure there wasn't a third Gilbert brother I was missing.
There may be an illegitimate child out there somewhere. Who knows? All right, so when they hit Jerry Lawler with the car, there were people watching at home that were, fearing. They actually thought something happened to Lawler. So they called the police and said that Jerry Lawler got hit by a car on TV. So when the police got there, they got to the TV station, and they, and Lawler had to tell them, no, it's a storyline, I'm fine. So Lawler actually was forced to go on TV and say, no, I'm good. I mean, he still had to somehow sell the injuries, but he's like, no, I'm good. I'm going to be okay, because there was actually like fear that Eddie and Doug were going to get legitimately arrested. So, all right, Clinic, any questions or comments so far?
So, let's ask, did he have any good successful title runs in his career?
Yeah, I mean, he was in, when he was in the Continental Wrestling Association, which was Memphis, he held the AWA Southern Heavyweight title, which basically was, it was a Memphis thing. It really, the AWA really had nothing to do with it.
Right.
He was an ECW Tag Team Champion once with the Dark Patriot, who was actually Doug Gilbert under a mask. And this is back when it was known as Eastern Championship Wrestling. He's a former NWA United States Tag Team Champion with Rick Steiner, and they were known as the First Family back then. He's a former UWF, you know, the Universal Wrestling Federation, Mid-South. He held a television title there once. He's a former UWF Tag Team Champion with Sting. He's held many titles in the USWA. In the Global Wrestling Federation, he's a former North American champion, two-time GWF TV champion. So, yeah, so he's held many titles. I mean, he never really, like, held a title in the WWF because he really wasn't, you know, there that long. Too
featured,
old.
Wasn't really featured in the WWF?
I mean, he was in there the now. 80s. But then, you know, he left, I think it was in, it was in 84. No, he left around the time when the WWF really started getting big with Hogan and all that. That's when he went to, afterwards, that's when he went to Memphis. Okay, Kenny, anything to add from what I've just said so far?
So first off, Eddie Gilbert. I'm trying to think of a good a comparison of, like, someone, a famous actor I could compare him to in terms of he has all the tools and everything, but he just never was, like, able to break, like, be the superstar, the huge star, and I really couldn't. One thing about him that you got to understand is, like, had he stayed in the WWF, he actually probably would have had a great spot because he basically was the prototype for Roddy Piper as his character, right? Smaller guy, smaller heel, but great promo, right?
Yeah.
And he probably would have had Piper's spot in some fashion if he had stayed around. But, definitely his biggest feud was with Jerry Lawler. I mean, the whole thing about the King of Memphis. And basically it was just a takeoff on, it was basically Lawler's feud with Jackie Fargo, but Lawler was now the king and Eddie Gilbert was the upstart. You know, and they started throwing fire and shit at each other and all that crap.
Right.
And, like, I mean, other than, you know, I mean, other he's a booker. He had a thing for hot blondes, obviously. He was with Missy Hyatt and Medusa. Sad story. His and Missy's marriage broke up because he felt he had to stay on the gas, you know, the supplements, because he was a smaller guy and she wanted to have kids. And, well, you can't do that when you're on the gas. So their marriage broke up.
Yeah, I was just going to say, that actually happened in 89, basically while they were still on TV together.
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, it's a great case, too, in terms of, like, he was, like, exactly the kind of, like, they were one of the better couple of wrestling because, like, he enhanced what he was doing and she was really good at, but like the way they were together was perfect, because it just, you bought them as a wrestling couple and as a real couple, because they, you know, like they were just real personalities, and in a lot of ways, like a really good comparison in a totally different way, but a good comparison was like she actually brought like what Elizabeth brought to the Macho Man's gimmick. She kind of did for Eddie in the sense of impact at his deal, because it like it helped. So like there was something you could hate about him, like, oh, you know, so he's now this wise ass hustler, with, you know, in shape, and he's got a hot broad with him, and the whole package was just great. And I think, like, you know, different things in life, you know, ended up, like, he could have been, he should have been much bigger than he was, and even with dying young, I still, I don't know if he, you know, I think he had way more potential. Even if he had it that young, I don't know if he ever would have broke through to the very top of the wrestling world.
So, all right, Sean, do you have any questions or comments or anything to add to what we've talked about?
At this moment, I do not.
Okay. All right, so basically, you know, like Kenny was saying with him and Missy Hyatt, they were a really good, you know, power couple. And a lot of people, you know, I don't know if you guys really know much about Missy Hyatt or not. Missy Hyatt has, you know, she's been around. And, you know, her and Eddie, I think Eddie was like the only guy she married in the wrestling business.
Wow.
And
she never married John Cena?
No, she never married John Cena.
John Tatum.
No. They were just dating.
Okay.
And you know, he's also, you know, he's been to Japan before too. He actually wrestled in the hardcore WING promotion in Japan as Michael Myers, and Doug was Freddy Krueger.
Yeah, in IWA Japan, right?
Yeah.
Ricky Quiñones and all them guys.
Yeah.
Best known probably for the famous King of the Deathmatch tournament where Mick Foley made his name internationally.
Right. But, yeah, I mean, Eddie basically, you know, he's a Memphis guy. Basically, you know, he was one of those Memphis stalwarts. But, like, the whole thing, you know, the feud with Jerry Lawler, like, that, I think, is what he's most known for in Memphis. Because of the story of it.
Well, wasn't the whole hot stuff deal, didn't that come from him throwing fire at Lawler?
I believe it was. I think, well, because before he was even in the feud with Lawler, like when he was first there before he went to WCW, he had that feud with Tommy Rich too after they were partners.
Oh yeah, the new Fabulous one. That is one of the great like in studio segments with where they're both bloody and they like they're forgiving each other and you think it's gonna be okay, and then you don't even see it happen because all you see is Lance Russell's face. Just like he's like shocked and horrified because Eddie Gilbert's beating the crap out of Tommy Rich.
Right. Well, that's right after Tommy Rich had done it to him.
Right. Yeah. It's like, yeah, it's a really wild feud. I mean, you know, Tommy Rich has kind of become a, it certainly has become a punchline in wrestling lately, but now, but, like, you know, at the time, it was a big deal. I mean, he was, you know, he was only a couple-day reign, but that was an NWA champion and all that shit. So, yeah, that was a big feud, too.
Right, and that was, like, yeah, and, again, they were known as the new Fabulous Ones, or as Fargo's Fabulous Ones, because the Memphis was basically still, they were, one, they were burying, and they were, two, still trying to cash in on the success that was attained by the original Fabulous Ones, which were Stan Lane and Steve Kern. Steve Kern, of course, who would go on to achieve tremendous success as Skinner in the WWF. By the way, that was sarcastic.
You don't want to say nothing bad about Steve Kern. Because let me tell you, apparently he's one tough SOB. Like, don't even think bad things about him. He'll come and kick your ass.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm sure he was, well, I'm sure he's not proud of the Skinner gimmick either.
Well, I tell you what, it's a hell of a thing if you see him as a Fabulous One and he's wearing all the fancy clothes and he's all jacked up and, you know, in good shape. And then you see him as a tobacco stunned out his shirt and crap, messy Florida hillbilly.
Now, another thing about Eddie Gilbert, too, is Eddie Gilbert actually had quite the friendship with Paul Heyman. And in the Continental Wrestling Federation in Alabama, Eddie was the booker and Paul Heyman was his assistant. So, you know, that's where Heyman really got, you know, started basically, you know, as a matchmaker slash booker. So, all right, Eric, any more questions right now as to everything we just talked about, or you have something to add, or?
When did he start his wrestling career? How did he get into it? From his father? I mean,
yeah, it was 1977. You know, basically he came in, he grew up as a fan of the business because his father was in it.
Well,
you know, he actually started in, he started taking pictures, you know, like a lot of those, lot of the guys did back then. Started taking, pictures for Memphis.
Okay.
That's what a lot of those guys did back then to get in. You know, Paul Heyman did it. Bruce Pritchard's brother Tom did it. Cornette did it.
Wow.
And, you know, when Eddie got...
His brother, he said?
Yeah, his brother Doug. Or who are you talking about? Are you talking about Eddie's brother or Pritchard's brother?
Eddie.
Yeah.
Only one sibling?
Yeah, only one sibling is brother Doug.
Okay. And he's the youngest? Remember?
Yeah. So, but yeah, he was only 16 when he started.
A young age, wow.
Yeah. Well, back then, you could start that young.
Terry Gordy, man.
Yeah. Well, Terry Gordy was 17, right, Kenny?
16.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a physically giant man, so he could have started at 12 probably, but.
Well, I mean, even in Japan, they start him as early as like 9 or 10.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's a whole, we could go down a whole rabbit hole, the dojo practices in Japan and professional wrestling, so.
Yeah. Yeah, let's just do that. But, all right, Clinton, any questions or comments?
No questions, no comments.
All right. Sean, you got anything to add right now?
No. I'm just listening. I'm enjoying the combo.
Aw. All right, so another thing that, like, I kind of want to touch on here that I think is very important as far as Eddie goes, and it's mainly because I was obsessed with this company. That's why we did a show on it last year. Eddie's working the Global Wrestling Federation, and there's a lot to get, because, you know, we've talked, you know, Eric, you and I talked to the global guys, and, you know, they talked about how, you know, when Eddie came in as head booker because he replaced Bill Eadie. A lot of people know Bill Eadie as Demolition Smash or the Masked Superstar if you go back and, you know, watch that time period. Eddie kind of brought in that Memphis style of booking with him. And, you know, when we talked to the global guys, you know, a couple of them had even said that, you know, that style of booking really didn't, you know, they really didn't like that style of booking because they felt like Eddie was, Barry Horowitz even said that he felt Eddie was too cartoony. go ahead, Kenny.
Well, I wonder how Barry, well, maybe, opinion of cartoon is based on how much money he's making at the time.
Yeah.
Because what
but,
you, when you make you the, for lack of a better word, the Jewish superstar and the heavy wearing a sequin yarmulke, that's pretty cartoony.
Right. Well, I mean, again, this is, well, I mean, this wasn't, his Barry's GWF run was before the WWF run, but.
Yeah,
no
disrespect to Barry Horowitz. I like Barry Horowitz, but let's be honest here. I think his ability to take the cartooniness of wrestling is based on how much he's being paid, and I can guarantee you he's making way more in the WWF than he was making in the GWF.
Yeah. Well, and here's another thing about the Eddie's reign in the GWF, too, is that, like, when he came in, GWF was actually, like, they were successful at one point. Like, that whole, like, summer of 91 to about maybe February, March of 1992, when they had all the money that they did, like, they were very successful. I mean, may not have been financially successful, but, like, they had a really good TV product out there at one point, and Eddie was responsible for a lot of it. And one of the feuds, like, Eddie's main feud in there was when he feuded with a guy by the name of Terry Garvin Sims.
Oh, so he was a friend of the show, correct?
Not a friend of the, I mean, him and I have talked before. Unfortunately.
Passed away, unfortunately, yeah.
Yeah, he passed away, but I had a conversation with him about 5-6 years ago. I've been on his show.
By the way, great podcast in general. If you guys can find, like, the archived editions of World Domination Ducks.
Wrestling World Domination.
Yeah, very good, very good thing.
Very, very good podcast. It was Terry Garvin and Bob Hazelwood, who actually is a friend of the show. Bob was on with the GWF guys. Terry was a really underrated worker back then, and he loved working with Eddie. Because he even told me that, because when him and I had a conversation. And he loved working with Eddie, but he also was not a fan, really, of Eddie's booking. But Eddie was one of his favorite opponents in the ring. And that's, I think, the way a lot of guys felt, is not necessarily a fan of the guy as a booker, but if they were told they were working with him, they were happy. And, I mean, that was the same way, though, a lot of guys felt about Jerry Lawler. They loved working with him. He was great in the ring, but booking, they couldn't stand him. Like, they hated his booking. But also in the GWF, Eddie came up with the idea of the Dark Patriot. Now, for anybody that doesn't know, the Patriot was the character portrayed by Del Wilkes, which was actually, Kenny, I don't even know if you know this, but Craig Johnson, played by John Horton, who was he was an announcer for the USWA Dallas and then for the Global Wrestling Federation. He had told me that the Patriot character was actually created by Bill Eadie.
I buy that. That makes sense. You know, I mean, if you think about it.
Yeah, that was
it's basically.
Go ahead, Ken.
A variation on the mass superstar, right? Big muscled guy and a good looking gimmick, right? I mean, same thing.
And it was basically like it was created by Bill for Dell. For Dell to start using in the GWF. So the Patriot Del Wilkes was actually the GWF's biggest star at that time. And they came up with this idea that, you know, Eddie came up with the idea to start bringing in this character that was basically the Patriot's dark side. And it was the Dark Patriot, and eventually it would be revealed that Bruce Pritchard was the Dark Patriot's manager. Bruce Pritchard, who was who basically was in the GWF for a short period of time because he had been fired from the WWF. He needed something to do, or like he needed a job. And him and Eddie Gilbert were friends, which actually that job interview was kind of set up by Paul Heyman. And Eddie was talking to a lot of the guys from WCW, because actually quite a few of the guys from WCW were in the GWF, but then jumped ship to WCW. Mark Bagwell was there. You know, Cactus Jack was in the GWF for a short period of time. Several other GWF is actually where Booker T and Stevie Ray got their start. They were known as the Ebony Experience before they became Harlem Heat. But getting back to the Dark Patriot thing, Eddie Gilbert created the Dark Patriot character, and there was this big feud between the Dark Patriot and the regular Patriot. Never really got much payoff, though, because Dell was offered the opportunity to go to Japan, and they were offering him good money, so he took it. And then I think shortly after he left, Eddie and them kind of left, too, because there was like shakeup in the office. Joe Pedicino, who owned the company, and actually ended up selling the company. Leaving. And then basically for a lot of the guys that were there at the time, the money had run out for like the trans and stuff, because guys were getting their trans paid for. And the money had run out. So like the company had actually told them, you know, you got to start paying your way here if you want to work here. And a lot of those guys didn't want to do that, so they left. Eddie being one of them. And he was the North American champion at the time, because he beat Doug for the North American title. And he actually took it back to the USWA with him. And even though the GWF basically had stripped him of the title, they got a new title, and well, they got a new title eventually. And then, but they never recognized him. Like, after he left the company, like, they stripped him of the title, and even though he was defending it in the USWA, nobody in the GWF really paid attention to it. Even though they tried to make an, like, Eddie wanted to make an angle out of it. But the GWF basically was just like, nah, we don't care who you are anymore. All right, Eric, any questions right now?
What about his booking that some of the wrestlers didn't like, besides the cartoon stuff? Is there anything in particular that he did?
Eddie kind of grew up in that, with that Memphis style of booking. Like, that's what he was used to. Mm-hmm. So, like, the Jerry Lawler, the Jarrett's kind of booking, it didn't really work everywhere. Like, even the, you know, I kind of touched on it earlier, the angle that involved him and Terry Taylor versus Chris Adams and Sting, it was kind of like, it was a concession stand brawl. They called it the Battle of New Orleans. It was in, like, late 87. Eddie got idea from a concession stand battle royal, or not a battle royal, but a concession stand brawl that happened in it was the late 70s, right, Kenny, in Memphis?
I believe so, yes. The Tupelo concession stand brawl.
Yeah. And that was, I'm trying to think of who was involved in that. Kenny, do you remember?
Oh, I'm looking it up right now. It was Larry Latham and the Baron of the Lawler family, good old Honky Tonk Wayne Ferris himself.
Like, it was just them?
It was them. Well, there were several Blind Bombers, but it was Latham and Honky Tonk versus Bill Dundee and Jerry Lawler.
Okay.
Of course. Who else is it going to be, right?
Right, exactly. And I think even...
Oh, and Dundee,
or go ahead, Kenny.
And they were managed by Danny Davis, the... Not the referee, but the...
The Nightmare, right?
The Nightmare, yeah. The Nightmare and OVW trainer and founder, co-founder with Cornette.
Right. And I remember, like, I think, Eric, when we had Bill Dundee on the show... You know, several months back, like, you know, we had asked him about, you know, a lot of that Memphis stuff. And I think even, I mean, I would have to go back and listen to the episode, but I remember asking him about Eddie Gilbert. And, like, especially, like, the angle with Lawler and how they, and... He just got, I forgot like what he said, but or like how he said it, but he basically said that, like, you know, that particular angle that was too real for people, even though it was. But like Eddie's booking, a lot of the ideas that he would have like in his booking tenure were basically like redone Memphis angles.
Okay.
And
isn't that what a lot of bookers do anyway? Professional wrestling is
right.
Retrend.
Right, but you know, back in those days, like you were still supposed to be original. But Kenny, what were you?
Well, the original concession stand brawl is on YouTube. It's probably not the whole match, but. It's 9:15. It'll come right up if you type it in Tupelo Concession Stand Brawl. So you can check that out. The other thing, though, is I think the thing with Eddie isn't so much that he was repeating stuff, is that where and how soon he was repeating it. Like I said, like, he wasn't repeating, you know, he wasn't going to a different place and doing a the same story. Like, he was doing Fargo Waller with himself, you know, with the roles changed in Memphis. He wasn't doing it, like, you know, in California. You know.
Right.
So it wasn't like he was, you know, it wasn't like he was doing a different, it wasn't doing different stuff. He wasn't doing anything bad in the sense he was doing the same stuff, but he was doing it in the same place, which is the real no-no.
Right. Yeah, you don't want to, and Eddie basically, like with Eddie's booking style, and again, like, I go back, or, you know, I've gone back and I've watched, like, some of the stuff, like, you know, I've watched Eddie's work, and I actually, you know, I'm a fan of Eddie's work, and I'm a fan of Eddie as a heel. I mean, and I was a huge fan of the GWF, you know, back in the day. And especially, like, I liked that time period where I knew Eddie was in charge. But unfortunately, you know, some people weren't. It's not everybody's cup of tea.
Right.
Clinith, any questions right now?
Okay, so you said the Dark Picture was, like, one of his one good rivalry, but didn't receive a good payoff. Was there, like, a rivalry that had anybody in, like, the GWF that was actually, like, a good, like, written out?
Okay, so the stuff he did with Terry Garvin Sims, even though, like, Terry Garvin, or, like, you know, it ended with Eddie kind of, you know, still obviously being the champion and all that, and, like, Eddie, you know, Terry Garvin didn't really get, like, that big moment or whatever. Like, they had really good matches. And it was a good payoff because then, like, at the end, like, the two of them would actually, you know, join forces until Eddie left the company because Eddie started a babyface run. But there was one point in the feud, and one of the things that I think – they did it a lot in Memphis once Jerry Lawler learned how to do it was, you know, throwing the fireball, which, you know, you really don't see that a lot nowadays. Although, you know, Alexa Bliss did it to Randy Orton a few months ago. But, you know, you throw the fireball at somebody, and Eddie Gilbert...
You know, it is legitimately dangerous. More so than usual stuff in wrestling. It is legit dangerous. I mean, Cornette almost fucking flash-fried Ronnie Garvin's face, and Undertaker burned... Paul Bearer pretty bad. Yeah, so it's not your usual unsafe wrestling thing. It's something, you know.
Right.
Serious.
Right, exactly. Especially, like, for guys that, like, because, you know, I guess there's, like, a trick to it to where, like, you know, you can make it look really cool, but it's not, like, so dangerous. But, like, if you don't do it right, then that's when shit goes wrong.
Yeah, it's a very fine line.
Right, exactly. But, yeah, like, that feud that Eddie had, you know, with Terry Garvin, I would probably say that was probably Eddie's, you know, best work because they had really good chemistry. All right, Sean, you got any questions or anything to add right now?
Yeah, what would you say he was best known for?
Best known for?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, there's a lot to pick from. I mean, what I would say, like, personally to me, what I best remember him for, and it's mainly because I've watched it a lot, is his GWF stuff. But, like, a lot of people, like, especially in, like, the Philadelphia area, would probably remember him as the guy that, you know, really started putting ECW on the map in 1993.
Gotcha.
you know, other people might say, oh, you know, he was married one time to Missy Hyatt. And so, like, there's a lot to choose from, I think. But, like, in my personal opinion, like, what I best remember him for is the GWF stuff. And that's just because I kind of like going back and watching that stuff, because I was actually a huge fan of that when I was a kid, especially because it would always be on, like, after I got home from school. Because they actually aired at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon on ESPN.
I did not know that.
Yeah. So, like, that's what I would best know him for. I mean, I think a lot of people in Philadelphia would say they best remember him as, ECW and the Booker there. And also, you know, when he did the King of Philadelphia gimmick as a ripoff, kind of the King of Memphis. Which obviously was basically, it was a shot at Jerry Lawler. But, I mean, nothing was really going to be made of it because, you know, the WWF wasn't paying attention to ECW at that time. Another thing I kind of wanted to touch on here is when he was in WCW back in, you know, late 88, early 89, you know, obviously he would stay there until about 1990. He was actually, and this is kind of like, it's not on Peacock right now. It was on the old WWE Network, and I'm sure it's going to get added at some point. There was an episode of World Championship Wrestling, which would then become WCW Saturday Night. Eddie challenged Ric Flair and Barry Windham to a tag team match. And Ric Flair and Barry Windham were, you know, the last two remaining members of the Horsemen. And I think, and Kenny, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think J.J. Dillon had just left too. And I think this is actually their first outing with Hiro Matsuda as their manager.
Yeah, because JJ was in the WWF. He has a very interesting career right about this time. He goes from there to the WWF. Then he's got he's back in WCW like a few years later, being their commissioner.
Right. So it was Eddie had challenged Rick and Barry to a tag team match. Said he had a mystery partner. Nobody knew who it was. But I think, like, he kind of just said that his partner was, like, Mr. X or something. I believe, like, that's what they called him. Mm-hmm. And when they came out, when the Mr. X revealed himself, it was actually Ricky Steamboat. And Steamboat came out, and I believe he actually pinned Flair in the match, which is actually what set off that trilogy of matches that Flair and Steamboat had in 1989. But I think a lot of people forget that Eddie Gilbert was part of that too. So,
yeah, you know, one thing that doesn't get mentioned, and I don't know why, and I have to assume this is true, he must have given, or at least Stone Cold either took it from, or he told Stone Cold to take it, he must have gave him the stun gun, because where else would you have got the move?
Right, yeah.
I mean, Eddie Gilbert called it the hot shot.
Yeah, Eddie used it because he called it the hot shot. Because that's technically what it is.
So I got to figure he got it from Eddie somehow, or took it as a tribute to maybe, but you know, that's definitely one thing that never gets mentioned is, like, that he innovated that move pretty much.
Right. Yeah. It doesn't get mentioned. I mean, also, too, like, Eddie wasn't the only one really that used it either. Like, Ted DiBiase would use it in the WWF from time to time. Or I think he used it, like, maybe two or three times.
Yeah, it wasn't his finish, though, either.
I think he used it as a finish once.
Probably.
At WrestleMania 4, he used it to beat Don Morocco.
Okay.
And I saw him use it a couple other times, too, but it wasn't, like, actually, like, a finisher in a match. But, Eddie basically, you know, he kind of innovated that move, which it's a hard move, really, to get down, because if you've seen Steve Austin use it a few times, like, there's been a few times where Austin has, like, badly mistimed it.
Well, again, it's another one of those things in wrestling that looks very easy and safe, but it isn't, because for those who don't know, ropes are, okay, first of all, they're not really ropes most of the time. They're steel cable wrapped in rubber.
Yeah.
So, like, when you, there's a reason, like, that you run the ropes and you hit them a certain way, because if you don't, it legitimately hurts. One of the most painful things I ever did when I was in training was, I hit the ropes sideways, and I thought I got punched in the kidneys.
Yeah, very unforgiving.
So
yeah.
If you get dropped, you know, dropping someone across it, it's not an easy thing.
Right, and Sean, I'm going to bring you in real quick on this, too. You've actually had, like, experience in the ring before, right?
Technically, yes. It was more around my older brother, Steve, that was actually wrestling up in Rochester. I think it was Pier 6 Wrestling at the time. He was feuding with this guy called Dane the Pain, and it was for their American title or whatever. But at the time, my brother destroyed his knee. I think he tore his ACL or something. And they were still doing the feud. And I had to go in there and basically be like, hey, you're picking on my, you know, brother who can't even defend himself right now. And I got in the ring, and then I got jumped from behind. Got whipped with the belt a couple of times. But I also did do some little bits of training.
Right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I wasn't really talking about the backyard wrestling that you and I did, you know, back many moons ago.
No, that also happened. I thought you meant, because I know, I think I told you that, because you knew my brother.
That's what I was talking about. No, I was not talking about you and I, you know, wrestling against one another. I still try to forget that from time to time.
Yeah, me too. That was some painful memories.
Yeah, those were not, I mean, it was fun back in the day. It was fun when we did that until afterwards when you and I couldn't move for 3 days.
Right, yes. That's because we bit off more than we could chew.
Yeah, 40 minutes of you and I wrestling one another when I was completely out of shape and you were, you know.
Yep. Well, you're the one that wanted it to be the ladder match, so.
Yeah.
I was just young.
No, it was my – I'm not saying it wasn't my idea. I'm just saying that it was stupid.
Yes. Very fun.
But, all right, so back to Eddie, because we really don't need to talk about my wrestling career. but Eddie also, like, kind of getting back to his UWF stuff and the especially the Hot Stuff International and the fact that he managed, you know, Sting, Ultimate Warrior, and Rick Steiner, you know, before they were real big names. A couple other guys that were also in Hot Stuff International, which I really didn't know this until I read it earlier, but Iceman King Parsons and Dick Murdoch were also in Eddie's stable with him.
Well, there's a combination.
Yeah.
There's probably break space and time in some way.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if they were, like, actually in Hot Stuff International at the same time. I just read that they joined it at, like, they were part of the group at some point. I don't know if they were actually in there at the same time or not, because obviously Dick Murdoch, you know, Dick Murdoch's past or whatever may have may complicate things with Iceman Parsons. Mainly because Murdoch at one point was rumored to be part of a famous clan. the Hot Stuff International stuff, because also too, Eddie actually did some, you know, work. He also managed the Russians. I can't remember which Russians they were. I don't think it was Kenny, which Russians did he manage? Do you remember?
I don't know, but this was cool because they did something that really you can never see in wrestling, where, like, he dropped the whole deal that he basically said, look, I'm not changing who I am, or I'm not changing, you know, I'm not going to be a good – he basically said, I'm not going to be a good guy now, but I am – I'm American first, and I'm not going to hang around with these commies, basically. And he left them, yeah.
Yeah. Well, also, too, at one point, I believe they actually buried Bill Watts underneath the Russian flag.
Probably.
And I think I've seen that before, too, I think. So, but, yeah, like, he was, and this is also around the time he was also booking in the UWF. So he came up with a lot of ideas. And, again, like we said earlier, not a lot of people were really fans of some of his ideas. But some of them were entertaining to watch. Like, I was entertained, like I said, by a lot of the stuff he did in the GWF. I didn't really watch a lot of the early ECW stuff because ECW really wasn't my thing. But also, but yeah, he just, I mean, he won the Best Booker Award in 1988 with the Wrestling Observer Newsletter. But then again, you know, think of who writes that.
Well, that you bring up something I forgot about and I wanted to bring up here, is Eddie Gilbert was really like the first wrestler who was like, he made his career basically, his later career basically, you know, not being afraid to talk to the dirt sheets. He was well known. He was one of the, I think he was one of the few guys that was open that he was a subscriber. And, you know, he felt Meltzer and all those guys' stories and shit and everything.
Yeah, he was the first one. I know Brian Pillman would do it later.
Yeah.
But I believe you are right. That, you know, Eddie Gilbert was the first one to do that. Which, you know, a lot of guys did that, but not a lot of guys really admitted it. Which, I don't, Kenny, were you at one point ever subscribed to the Observer?
No. I never was, I never bought any wrestling, you know, books until Mick Foley, anything paper-wise in wrestling. Like, I got a couple magazines once or twice, but until Mick Foley wrote his book, I didn't, had nothing like that.
All right. I mean, I didn't get them until like later, but like I have a couple of old editions of the Observer, but like, and I remember, I think in 2009 I actually was subscribed to them for a while, which was actually funny, I got the Death of WCW book, and in the back of the book is the number to actually call to order or to become a subscriber of the Observer. But because the Death of WCW book was written like a few years before, when I got the book, like that no longer active for the Observer, and it actually like that number, believe it or not, that number was actually a phone sex hotline at that point.
How would you know that? That's
I called it to. I called it to order the Observer. And okay. When I heard that it was a, and then
when he heard it was a sex line, he all of a sudden his mother had a $100 phone bill.
Get off my phone.
Wow. Even worse, you had a $100 phone bill.
Yeah. Well, no, believe it or not, I hung up right away. I didn't have that $300 phone $300 phone sex bill until, you know, a couple of years later, but that's another story.
Eric, make a drop of Doug saying he called the phone sex hotline and hung up pretty quick. That's a good joke.
I think he's told that before.
Can you do a
show?
Oh, no, not in the show.
I haven't told it on the show. I've told it to you in private, but now everybody's, you know.
I'm a blogger.
Forget about it. Back to hot stuff.
Yeah.
Eddie Gilbert, right. Not hot stuff. Doug Hummer. Actually, that's a good name for you.
Hello?
What?
Hello?
Doug, how much longer?
I don't know. Don't interrupt me during a live show.
This isn't live to tape.
I know.
I think this is a highlight of the show right here.
I hope not, but you never know.
Oh, boy. You have no control over
that. Yeah. All right, so anyway... back to hot stuff, Eddie Gilbert. So does anybody have any other questions or anything to add right now?
This will be my final comment. I gotta get going in a second here. You know, thank you for having me again, as always, guys. It's always a pleasure. Eddie Gilbert was a guy who had a lot of talent, and just whether through, you know, bad luck or whatever, he just never got a chance to show it off. And it's a shame because he was something, all right. He was hot stuff, man. I mean, it's funny now, but it was his deal. And pretty much it was true. I mean, he kind of had a little bit of the CM Punk thing going on, you know, with the women in wrestling before CM Punk was even born. But, Eddie Gilbert, man, it's sad that he died, and he really was a guy who kind of brought Memphis to the national stage, that style at least, more than anybody. Because, I mean, King was in the WWE, a bigger stage, but he wasn't doing Memphis. He wasn't Memphis Jerry Lawler.
Right.
So, yeah. What we got, Eddie Gilbert's, you know, some of it's really great stuff. If you can check it out, I'm sure if you look hard enough, you'll find most of it. And it's a pleasure,
yeah.
Boys, and I always enjoy it. It's always a fun time.
All right. Thank you, Kenny.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys. Bye-bye.
Yeah,
bye.
Okay.
I do have a comment.
Huh? Go ahead.
Oh, but I wanted to mention that this was a poll by the fans. Chosen by the fans for Underdog.
Yeah.
So that's why we're doing this today. I just wanted to mention that the fans chose Eddie Gilbert as the Underdog.
Right, which really, I mean, I don't know if you could really consider him an Underdog. But But yeah, I mean, this basically was, this was voted on by the fans. Eric, was that the comment?
What was that?
Was that the comment that you had, or?
Yeah, I just wanted to mention that.
Right. So, all right. Does anybody else have any questions on Eddie Gilbert or any comments?
No.
I do not.
All right. What was the best match you've ever seen from him, Doug?
The best match I've ever seen from him?
Yeah.
I mean, there was a lot of good ones.
Recommendations.
The best match I've ever seen him like wrestle was, it was a 2 out of 3 falls match on GWF TV. It was him and Terry Garvin.
Okay.
Now, real quickly, I do want to kind of touch on his death. And it was, you know, he did one match in Smoky Mountain Wrestling. He worked one night there. It was a couple of episodes. But then he took a job as a booker for the World Wrestling Council in Puerto Rico. But unfortunately, in Puerto Rico, he actually passed away. He died of a heart attack.
That's upsetting.
But, yeah. Died of a heart attack. Also, you know, a lot of people know of like the shoot interviews, you know, over the years and how shoot interviews have become a thing. In early 1994, Eddie actually sat down with a guy by the name of Bob Barnett and filmed a shoot interview called Looking for Mr. Gilbert, where he spoke openly about his career and all that. And basically that's credited as like the first ever wrestling shoot interview. So, just wanted to touch on that real quick. Anybody else have any questions or comments about Eddie Gilbert before we sign off here?
Oh, so there will not be a test?
No.
I've been taking notes the whole time.
Yeah. Oh, wow. No, there will not be a test of.
That's too safe.
Yeah. I mean, you're going to be lucky if you ever get invited back.
Oh, I mean, that's fine. I mean, you can be rude about it.
Wow, man. You don't have to hurt the man's feelings about that. That hurts. Be nice. It's a nice podcast.
Well,
nice
it's not because of him, but
it's still pretty mean.
Yeah, well. don't blame me.
Well, do we have to call your mother?
Do you have any final comments, Doug?
Not really. So, all right. So this was the history lesson on Hot Stuff Eddie Gilbert. Thank you. Thank you, Kenny, for being on. Eric, Clinton, always a pleasure. Sean, thank you for joining us. Anytime. Next time, do the show from your own house. all right. We'll see everybody next time. We'll see everybody Friday night or for the Unscripted Wrestling Podcast on Judgment Day 2000. And we'll see everybody tomorrow for Mindy and Daniel's Scaredy Cat Show.
Thank you, Professor Doug.
No problem, guys.
Thank you, Doug.
All right.
Later.
Adios.
You're welcome. Later, everybody.
Later.